In this episode, I speak with the Campbell family, who I found through XR Families, which is a branch of Extinction Rebellion. The first half of the episode is hearing from the children, Marlo, aged 3, Drake, aged 7, and Wren, aged 13. And in the second half, I'll speak with their mother, Hester, about motherhood in a rapidly changing world. I really wanted to hear from the children directly, with their truthful and candid perspectives. But to allow one of the children to fully express themselves, there is some swearing.
Young people. How are young people under 25 coping with the climate emergency? How do they feel about their futures, starting families or going to university? And what matters more, having a good job or doing everything they can to save society from collapsing? In this series of Tipping Points, I speak with young people who have taken extreme measures to address the greatest challenge humanity has ever faced.
You're all different ages, and you're going to have different things to say. So I think it's going to be important to hear from all three of you. Firstly, can you say your name and your age?
I am Marlo. I am 3 years old.
My name is Drake, and I am sort of 7 and a half.
Yeah, my name is Wren, and I'm 13.
Thanks for joining me. So my first question, I'd like to know what you think is the role of adults in the climate crisis versus what you think is the role of young people.
Well, adults should be educating young people, and children should be eager to learn about this stuff, and adults need to be educating children rather than children having to find out about it themselves.
Drake, what would you like your teachers to tell you about climate change?
Well, first, I've got a great idea about Kidzania and you.
I should add here that Kidzania is an indoor city for children where they can get a feel for different jobs, with branches all over the world. Both Drake and I recently went to the London branch to protest against its Shell and British Airways sponsorship.
So I know that you're a teacher and a scientist. So I'm thinking, why can't you be the head teacher of Kidzania? So Kidzania can be a school about climate change and jobs.
What would you like Kidzania to teach you then?
To teach us more about the climate. More than just things like regular schools.
Marlo, what do you think adults should do?
When I be with an adult, I hold their hand and across the world.
So you think adults should look after young people? Wren, I hear a lot of the time that people say, you know, you shouldn't scare young people by telling them about the climate crisis. And there was an article recently, and it was saying one of the problems about telling young people about the climate crisis is that they feel that there's no point, and they feel depressed and they feel scared and all of these things. Do you think that it's important to tell young people at all different ages about the climate crisis? And if so, how much do you think is important to talk about?
That article, whatever that was, is really valid. When I first learned about climate crisis, I found it very depressing. I would like cry about it, and we learn about it in lessons because we learn about it very minimally, like rainforests. And I found it very sad. And Mum was very depressed about it. It can be very depressing, but it doesn't have to be depressing. Like, there's a certain way to talk about it, especially to like younger children, make them want to feel empowered, like tell them about the power that they can have and not what could happen, that the world might end, not the disastrous stuff. But yeah, children should be learning about the climate crisis. It's vital.
And why do you think some adults don't want to talk to children about climate change?
Because they don't want to scare them, or this is pretty unlikely, but maybe they feel insecure about it. Like, oh, I'm an adult, everything's meant to be sorted out, I'm so proud, I'm not going to admit that the world is messed up. Some parents might not want to tell their kids because they don't want them to be depressed. And that's, we should be telling children about what they can do, not what they can't do. The government has a really large hand in this, but children can do plenty of stuff. They can do the tiniest little things, and it might not help like that much overall, but it might make them feel happier, might make them feel empowered, and then over time they'd want to do bigger stuff. So it's just like baby steps, and some parents may be scared of bringing their children into like climate change protests. Maybe they don't want them missing school and strikes. They don't have to go to strikes. It's just children should know what power they have. We're cute. If we say something, people will listen.
Marlo, do you feel happy or sad at a protest?
I feel happy and sad.
When you're at a protest, are there other children there as well?
Yeah.
What do you think about the noise of a protest?
Sad.
Is it too loud?
Sad is too loud.
Ren, how you feel about Just Stop Oil?
Just Stop Oil.
Yeah, do you know who they are?
Never heard of them. I'm guessing they're talking about stopping oil.
Which protest groups are you involved with?
I just go to the ones that Mum goes to. I know that there's like a youth group where like kids my age or like up to 16 or 18, something like that. It's really, really cool watching them. I once saw them blocking roads.
That was XIU.
Yeah, XIU. I did feel really bad for the people on the bus, but it was really cool to see a bunch of kids my age, maybe slightly older, with a giant microphone. They were really polite to the people on the road. They're really polite to the cars and the buses. It was really cool to see them. And I don't really like protests. They're wonderful, and I love it when they're like interactive and stuff. It's just really loud. Love the drums. They're just really loud. I think protests are better, but marches, don't really like them.
Do you think it's important for children to go on protests and marches?
Maybe not marches, because no kid would like that. Protests, I think, would be better, because I'm sure a kid would love to just talk on a microphone. I know Drake would, and I've done that a couple of times. It's nice to have people listening to you, even when you're tiny. And usually if you weren't standing up on a big thing, no one would hear you because you're so small. Standing on like a block, and then all the adults are watching, listening to you. And it feels really nice. Like I said, empowerment, it make them feel like they have power, because they do. And it's good to show them what they can do. But a lot of times adults are wrong. So children should know that they can defy people, and that adults can't be wrong.
How do you think adults are wrong in this case?
Adults drill oil, so that's them messing up. And Biden signed the Willow Project pretty recently, and that was a big blunder on his part, because his excuse was that the economy needs, it will fix the economy, we need more oil, whatever. Like 8 billion tons of oil. It would have just like completely just like, no going back. Nothing we can do now. We're just little humans. Sometimes adults think that they're doing the right thing, like villains in cartoons. They think that they're doing the right thing, so they justify themselves, and then they don't listen to anyone speaking sense. So a lot of times adults are wrong, and it's good for children to know that adults can be wrong.
Which adults do you think speak the most sense?
Adults that aren't overly serious, adults that haven't lost the sense of being a child, adults that don't really care and just care about profit and just like are so invested in their little life right now, they tend to be the ones that might be blinded by, I don't know, money. My mum, for instance, she's fun and she talks really well, and she has people like being really emotional what she talks about. Adults that haven't forgotten what it's like to be a child, they tend to talk sense.
Would you hear someone else's parents speak sense? Or alternatively, did your friend's parents sometimes say something that you think is wrong?
Yeah, once my friend's dad was really, really affected by, I don't know if they were trans or if they were a cross-dresser, I'm just going to call them they. There was a person who looked like a man in women's clothing, and my friend's dad was really, really adamant about how that made him very, very uncomfortable. And I found it really funny because he sounded like an entitled white man. It was really, really funny. And even his wife, my friend's mum, was like, this is really dumb, just let them be. But obviously, if someone has power, then it's not funny. So I think most people have the same idea about the climate crisis. I think most people that are decent, and I hope that most people are decent, they know that it's real, and they're not listening to the dumb people that think it's not real.
I wonder how you feel about adults saying all the problems have to be fixed by your generation.
Not very nice. It's like they're handing all the dirty work to us. Not very nice. I was in debate, mate, and the motion was the younger generation should deal with the climate crisis. The fact that some people think that really annoys me. But the fact that they're blaming it on us when we weren't even conceived when this happened, that's not fair. Everyone should be trying. Old people, I guess, if a person is in power, they should try their best to help the people that aren't in power, like children or working class or just normal people. Everyone should be trying to do something and not just leaving it to the children.
How do you feel about the rich adults getting on private planes all the time and that kind of thing?
They should try. Like, I hate it when there's a bunch of rich people, so much money, and they just don't do anything about anything, and they're just living the best life. We have money, obviously. I'm not saying that we're the poorest people. Yeah, mum's living on debt right now, so we're definitely not the richest. So when people who are much better, well off, don't do anything with their money, and they're already living a comfortable life, but all they want is more material things. And I love material things. I absolutely love buying myself stuff. I love shopping. But the fact that they've got so much money to spare and they just don't do anything really pisses me off. Try help. And I'm sure there's a bunch of rich people who do help and they're like activists and all that stuff. And that's good. But I'm pretty sure most of them don't. So that needs to stop.
Do you think your school supports activism?
I know my last one did because I went on quite a few like Greta Thunberg Friday strikes and they were really chill with it. In our geography class, we did talk about climate like once last year. I think they just try not to talk about it that much. They don't want to bum people out or something. I'm not sure.
What do you think the perfect school? How would they be treating the climate crisis and Fridays for Future? And
my perfect school would, like, I don't know, maybe have a specific subject about climate change once a week. Talk about all the different things you can do. And I know some people get really bored and bummed out by it. I don't know how to fix that. I don't really blame them. It can be really boring when people talk about all the money stuff. My perfect school would just acknowledge it. Maybe not obsess over it, because that can get a bit overwhelming at times. Like, I get it if some people don't really like it.
What would the perfect school have in the canteen?
Ooh, yeah, vegan option, vegetarian option. My school does that, but the vegetarian option is so gross. My perfect school would have more options, like an array of options every day. A vegan option, a vegetarian option, fish option, maybe, and a very meat option. But they would have the very meat option be limited slightly, so like so that they're not using up so much meat, and that people kind of get used to not eating meat all the time, maybe.
What's the problem with eating meat?
Oh, I love meat. Tastes so good. Bloody love meat. Don't eat it though. I know why it's unsustainable. It's very, very horrific what animals have to go through for their bodies to be sold and then to be eaten. There's this lady, her identity revolves about her being vegan. Her name is the vegan teacher. And she just makes these stupid little songs with a stupid little plastic ukulele about being vegan. And one of her songs said that if you eat meat, God hates you. People that make their identity about being vegan thing and then force it onto other people and then compare it to stuff like this, just shut up.
I think it's really important what you said. If you have people saying, I'm vegan and you should be too, and if you're not, then you're a bad person. This is terrible messaging. I wonder if there's a better way at school for people your age to learn about the benefits of eating plant-based diets, but also the problems around the meat and dairy industry, but in a way that isn't disempowering. You know, it still gives you the choice,
yeah, but
it just teaches you in a way where you have more knowledge and then you can make your decision after that.
Yeah. Speaking from experience, if someone was talking about like the food pyramid, it's not very interesting. So it is really hard to have a lesson that would talk about this kind of stuff and then someone listen, because usually it just doesn't change anything. It's not going to be changed in one class. So I don't really know a way.
Because it can get really dark. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos from inside these places, but there's a comment that says if abattoirs, the place where the meat is processed, if they had glass walls and everyone would be vegan, you know, is it appropriate to show children this kind of
definitely not.
Do you remember when I told you about it?
Oh, yeah, I was crying for a long time. You told me very graphically, and I cried for a while. Definitely not. Don't tell them about that. Tell them that it's not nice and leave it at that. It's literally impossible to make everyone being vegan without giving them PTSD. So it would just be really, really hard to stop everyone from eating meat. It sucks when someone forces you to do something, because then you're going to try to rebel against it, because they are literally forcing it on you. And when you told me about like the process of animals being slaughtered and that stuff, it made me cry so hard. And even after that, I still ate meat. It's really horrible when someone guilts you about it. Really, really horrible. It has to be their choice. So I don't know.
This might be a difficult question, and feel free, you know, you don't have to answer it if you don't want. But I'd like to hear more about what you mean by climate anxiety. And what does it feel like when it gets really bad?
Climate anxiety really sucks. You don't feel like you have any control, and it's up to the people and the government that aren't really listening. You kind of realize that you're going to die. Well, obviously you're going to die, but it might not be such a nice death as you originally thought. And that's not really nice to think about. Like thinking about your great-grandchildren living, or maybe not living, maybe the world is uninhabitable, human race is like, maybe it's done. That's not a nice thing to think about. Maybe your children having to watch fire everywhere and all the animals gone, no plants, oxygen running out because there's not any trees anymore. If we don't do anything about it, it will come. There isn't a comfort in knowing that everyone else you love will have to experience that, and then they die like a painful, fiery death. That's not nice. It gets really bad when you're like, I know Mum told me that she was like up at night thinking about it. That's when it's really bad. And I just try not to think about it, because if I have a problem, I just try not to think about it. And that's just the easiest way to forget about things. But sometimes it's good to think about it. Because if you're driven, if you don't want something to happen, you'll try your best to stop it from happening. So climate anxiety, it sucks. It's really, really horrible. The worst case scenario, all the horrible things that could happen while we're in the safety of our graves is not a nice thing to think about. Or maybe it will happen in such a close amount of time that we'll still be alive. I don't know, maybe things will escalate that quickly. It builds a certain sense of character when you have a drive, when you have a goal. Maybe it will make you really, really driven and will make you want to fix things and to do your best, which is also really annoying, because then you're doing your best, but the people that can actually do stuff aren't doing their best. And that can feel really exhausting. Then you feel like giving up, and then the climate anxiety starts again when you're like, oh, I've given up, I'm not doing anything, what if this happens in a couple years? It's just a brutal cycle. And that's why it's kind of up to the people with power. We do protests, we do strikes, we do all the stuff online. I don't really know if it's helped.
What kind of breaks the cycle for you?
In a climate group, you've made friends in this group and you love organizing things and going on marches with your friends in this group, and you're having fun but also making a change. And that is the point where you're so invested in this where it starts feeling normal. And I've seen Mum, she's just really, really happy with all the people that she's really close to doing a thing that will bring them all to the same goal. And that is the point where like the climate anxiety kind of goes, because you are doing all you can and it's not up to you. You are doing all you can. So you just do your best and be happy while doing it.
I wonder if I might be able to ask one more question if Drake's there.
Drake's come for an ice lolly. Drake, Pete wants to ask you one more question. Okay, he's coming with the ice lolly to talk to you.
I just wanted to ask what he thought about Shell.
Oh, what do you think about Shell, Drake? He wants to swear, and I've told him he can't say any swear words.
Are you allowed swearing
on your podcast?
Yeah, he can swear if you want.
Drake, you're allowed to say what you like.
Shell is a bitch. Fuck Shell.
Why? What's the problem with Shell?
To make people think that Shell's such a great place. But no, Shell just wants more people to die.
Why does Shell want to do that, do you think?
For money, more oil, and also because they're very spoiled.
You think they can just do what they want because they're rich?
No. And I called the police, and I found police, talked about it with the police. So hopefully they will get arrested.
Yeah. So do you think that the bosses of these oil companies like Shell, do you think they should be in prison?
Yes, they're bitches.
And that's because they want money.
Yep. And pollution pollutes the air and takes away fresh air from your lungs.
And what about pollution of other things?
The water, food, people's health system, everything. Shell doesn't even think about anyone. Well, Shell is quite dumb because if they pollute the whole entire world, that means that they're not healthy, so they die. But everyone else dies too. Even kids. They're doing this to kids. They don't even care about anyone or kids. Like why the fuck are they doing this?
Do you feel really strongly about other things as well? Or is it just oil companies you feel this way about?
Well, all the bad things in XR, everything else in the things in XR, yeah.
Do you like going on to XR protests?
Yes.
What do you like about it?
It takes care of the environment, the climate change. It cares about everything, even about eating meat.
What do you think about eating meat?
I don't really eat meat, but when I do, it's on a special occasion.
Okay. How do you feel about people who don't eat meat at all?
I think they're very healthy.
Do you know how animals are produced?
Well, if they're mammals, it's the same way how humans do it. But if it's not a mammal, it comes out from eggs. But there's only one species that's a mammal that comes out of an egg. That is a platypus.
Some good animal knowledge.
Disney Plus.
So the mammals that we have in our food system in England, cows and sheep.
Yeah, it can be anything.
So how do you feel if you were to eat a dog?
Why are you making me think about that?
Well, because some people do that. What's the difference between a dog and a pig?
They're cuddly. They're soft. They're very cute. Same with pigs. But I don't really eat pigs, so...
Some people think differently about dogs and pigs, but they're kind of the same in lots of ways.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to hear from people your age. So thank you so much for talking to me about all of this stuff. It's been brilliant.
No worries. Okay, toodles, humans.
All right, bye. Were there any things that you heard that you hadn't heard before?
Yeah, some of what Ren was sharing with you, she hasn't said that to me. But I haven't heard her talk about death like that. But I know that she made a painting or a picture as part of some art competition, which was like this dystopian future where everything was dead and all the rivers were poisoned. And I think there were like skeletons floating in the river and things like that. And she told me about it, and she said her art teacher said, "That is terrifying." And that Ren just very matter-of-factly said, "Well, that's what's going to happen. Just some project about like what 2100 is going to be." That was the response from the school, like, "That's terrifying." She started coming to protest when she was 9. And then when she was 10, she just said, "I just want to have a childhood. Why do you keep bringing me to these things?" I think she also had a book. It was like Women of History, and Pocahontas was in it. Talked about the colonizers. And I said, "Do you know what colonization is?" And she said, "No." And then I described that Europeans and white men had sailed around the world, and where they landed, they stuck a flag and they said, "This is my land now." And that the indigenous people were pushed off their land. I mean, I'm quite honest, maybe I shouldn't be, but said, you know, a lot of indigenous people were killed if they resisted, and Pocahontas was indigenous to the land that they arrived on, and they took her back to England. When she sort of heard it and she understood it, she wailed. You know, sort of uncontrollable way, all this grief came pouring out, and she was going, why would people do that? She was so angry, and we were in the park. In the end, I think she just laid her head in my lap and she was just sobbing and crying. In Exile Families, we have Jo McAndrews that does calls with us. She's a child psychologist, she's a climate psychologist. She talks about just being with your child in their feelings and saying, "I hear you," or "That must be really hard to feel that." I kind of learned very quickly that if I'm going to be involved in this kind of thing and speak with honesty about colonial rule that we've inherited and we're in this system because of colonization and capitalism and things like that, that there's going to be big emotions and big responses.
I'm making an assumption here, maybe, that you learned about a lot of the climate crisis issues in adulthood. Is that fair to say?
Well, I was born in 1980, so in the sort of late 80s and 90s, we had like Captain Planet.
Captain Planet, he's our hero, gonna take pollution down to zero.
And another one called Defenders of the Earth.
Defenders of the Earth! Defenders!
And then there was the Fern Gully film, which I just found absolutely devastating. That was around 1990 or 91. It was called Fern Gully, the Last Rainforest.
And plant the seed to save a place called Fern Gully, the Last Rainforest.
And there are these bulldozers that just like rip the forest down. And Avatar is basically the same premise as Fern Gully was. So now I was always quite angry as a kid. I was always really aware of injustice, but I didn't really know about politics. Picked up a socialist worker paper when I was 16 and my stepdad smacked it out of my hands and said, "What are you doing with that shit?" So I didn't start going to marches until I was like 20. And I think when I was a child, they were also showing us a lot of things on TV about starving children in Ethiopia, and you'd see sort of NGO adverts with children with flies in the eye, their eyes and swollen bellies. And so you knew about drought and starvation. So I was very much aware of inequality. But climate crisis stuff, I mean, there was loads about the ozone layer and pollution, but not that we were actually crossing tipping point thresholds. I didn't understand that stuff until I was about 22. I'm 42 now.
Do you find that you feel that you need to control really strong emotions about certain things and hide it in a sense from your children? Or do you let them see?
I mean, I feel like I'm pushing my kids in a boat out to sea, out into open water, and they're absolutely defenseless. And I feel that about every young person. And I feel that towards adults, not just children. I feel that about the adults as well. I don't think I have been able to hide it from my children. So it hasn't been a conscious choice. And they've seen me grieve. My sister was killed in Syria. She volunteered there, and she was killed 5 years ago. You know, they saw me in a lot of pain with grief. They know that that emotions are okay, that emotions are not going to harm us. But this is, it's kind of like life and death cycle, isn't it? There was a pigeon that was not very well in the garden, and my daughter picked it up and put it in a box. And I think its wing was broken. I just said, I don't think that pigeon's going to make it. But she still wanted to sort of nurse it. And she was carrying it around, wrapping it in a blanket. And it wanted to jump out of the box. And it did this sort of extraordinary dance right before it died. It sort of threw its head back and opened its wings, like full wingspan. And it flapped them. And then it sort of froze. And in this very, very like slow motion, it then like brought his wings back in and then like rested on the ground. It literally did a death dance in front of us. And she was sad, but she was also, she just felt really connected to this pigeon because she had been nursing it that day. And we did a ceremony and we buried it. And she felt closure. I mean, she was 9 when I told her about abattoirs. So I haven't talked to Drake about that. So no, I haven't regretted anything. I mean, I've got quite an intense thing to compare it to, which is I had a very difficult relationship, which I left finally. That was harmful. And I thought to myself, how is it that I can face the breakdown of a livable planet and take action against it, but I can't face this situation that I'm in? I just thought I was trapped. And I was told when I wanted to get out of it that I couldn't, that I had no choice. And I believed it. So it took nearly 14 years to get out of it. My biggest sadness and regret is that the children witnessed a domestic abusive situation. So when you're asking me, like, do I think I've exposed them to too much when it comes to climate stuff? No, not in the slightest. I do have real sadness about the home life that they had. And we're all in recovery now, basically. I don't want them ever to feel like they are disempowered or that they feel trapped or that they feel like they've got no choices or no options. So I want them to see me being dynamic and taking action and making changes. And like Ren says, she doesn't necessarily think that any of what we've done, direct action stuff, has made a difference, or she doesn't know. But I owe it to all of them to put in the work and to try. It's like a force, and that's why things get so stressful for a parent, because you just feel like you're failing in your role to protect your child if you're putting them in danger. And right now, all children born today, you know, on the planet are in danger.
What would you say to someone who is thinking about having children and is worried about, as you say, you have control about whether you bring that life into the world or not?
I say that when a species gives up hope, it will stop reproducing. So children to me are hope, and we are wired for joy, and we are wired to want to make love and to want to make babies. And I know people that have terminated pregnancies because of their fear of the world they're bringing their children into, and have gone through real grief and trauma and heartache. I mean, one girl I know, I think she was like the third time she was falling pregnant, and she just sort of said, I don't know what to do intellectually. I just don't think I should be having a child, but my body really wants to have a child. So we can go into the fear and be led by fear. I mean, that's what I think of JSO. When you were asking Ren, what does she think of JSO? They're motivated by fear.
There was someone called Dr. Genevieve Gunter who recently said people used to think that fear would lead to disengagement and falling into doomism. But this is true only in isolation, she said. When frightening stories are told to people who are already concerned about the crisis, but they're already in context of empowerment, then outrage can follow, and outrage mobilizes people into action. Fear is the energy, and outrage converts that energy into action.
But could love also be the energy? If we don't love, then we don't fear losing the thing. So my friend who talks about burnout with me says that, you know, her activism is an act of love. She doesn't get burnout. She doesn't feel that stress. She doesn't feel the climate anxiety because she's acting out of love for life, which is why I'm in XR. Because we act in love. So all of this is in honor of my kids, putting myself in the road and stopping traffic and all of that. I'm not going to go to prison for the cause, because they will end up in care. and then I'm failing again, because they'll be separated from me, and my job is to radiate love onto them and to make sure they know they're loved.
We're going into a transition period where lives of adults will not be the lives that children will lead. And the idea of passing wisdom on becomes tricky, because it no longer is the, oh, I did this when I was young. No longer does that work in a lot of cases, but it sounds like it does in a lot in terms of emotional resilience.
Yeah. And have we grown up in a sort of emotionally illiterate society? I think there's a real tragedy of not allowing men to have a full range of emotions, like vulnerability and shame and humiliation. But children can name three generally: happy, sad, and angry. Many adult men have been raised in a way that they weren't allowed all those different emotions. So anger is what comes out, because it's the only one they have available. And my ex, you know, lived that life. When I say emotionally illiterate, I think of him. My dad's done a lot of work on himself. Like, he's 72 now. Certain emotions were not allowed in his house. We've got a very repressive British thing in this country, which is just get on with it, like the stiff upper lip. Don't complain. There's generational burying of feelings. And so how deep is that pit where those feelings have been pushed to? Because they don't disappear. It gave the British Empire and those other empires and the Germanic state and the French Empire and whatever, it gave them riches. What I think they got in wealth, they lost in spirituality, emotional resilience, emotional intelligence, connection with Mother Earth. So as the gold increased, you know, as much as they robbed and stole and killed, I feel like there was an equal reaction. And I feel like we're in this time of reckoning, and we're revaluing, hopefully, life. And they realize, you know, you can't eat money and all that. The values are going to shift very quickly.
I agree. And when I was about 12, 13, my mum put money into an ISA for me, you know, junior ISA. And the concept of eternal growth in finance was quite a big thing. Only really recently have I really realized that I don't suppose I will get a pension. And I wonder how you might feel about your children's retirement. What would that look like, in the sense that it probably won't be about pensions, but what do you think it might look like instead?
I've only recently been able to see, like, into the next week. So what my climate anxiety did to me sort of 3 years ago was it stopped me being able to see anything in the future. Since changing my situation and leaving my relationship, I've been able to see maybe a couple of months ahead, but I'm still not able to see any more than that, actually. I mean, I was in, like, catastrophization a lot. I've got this group that I found, which is a bit like a doomer group. I've had to, like, stop interacting with it because it's too much for my mental health, my antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication and stuff like that. Because I know how bad things are. I know about the methane release. I know about the Thwaites Glacier falling apart. I know that the Amazonia now, like, emits carbon instead of sequestering carbon. I know about the bread baskets all over the world, like the different places that we really rely on grain and the crop failures. And I've been through, like, a massive grief cycle, which was, like, at one point I wasn't very functional. And now, in order to be functional, I just can't go there. But that means I can't think about my children being at retirement age. My youngest was born in 2019. If he lived to 80, that would be 2099. It's within their lifetime, and nothing has changed. And the trajectory is still like this. It's still vertical. There's no flattening. So we still talk about, we have time. I don't think we do. I can't buy into any certainty. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have a pension. I've got a mortgage on this flat. When the kids are 40, if they make it, we're not going to have ownership of things in the same way. in this country, there's a big denial thing. I will always look for the truth first. It's like, tell it to me. Okay, now it's digested, but I can't take it every day.
Do you feel that your children are similar?
I don't know. I mean, my ex hated that I did any activism at all. And he would say, why are you worried about the problems of the world? This is your world, these four walls. But because it was so unbearable for me, I was finding escape in opening up a laptop during COVID and joining Zoom calls with other activists. I think without activism and finding all those people, I wouldn't have left that situation that was hurting me anyway. So I don't, when you say with the kids, they don't want to take it every day. Children shouldn't have like fear and grief thrust on them every day. What children need is reassurance and love. They need to know that they're safe. They need to know that the world is safe so that they can grow. We can't raise depressed children. We do need to raise empowered children to be really sure of their problem-solving skills and their ideas. And, you know, Drake introduces himself to people and says, I'm an engineer. And before we came on this call today, he was telling me that thing about he thinks that you should start a school and you should be the headmaster and you should teach children how to build a city that doesn't make any pollution. And then I told Ren, and Ren was like, that's quite a good idea. She said, well, schools are expensive. Maybe not a school, maybe a youth centre. Maybe a youth centre where you teach children how to make cities that make no pollution. They're natural problem solvers. Let's talk about problems. Say, what do you think? What should we do? And they have really workable ideas.
I'm aware of the time.
Oh, the last thing I'm going to say then before we finish is the best thing that really has helped me. And everyone kept saying, you know, you need to look up Joanna Macy. You need to find Joanna Macy. You need to read her work. They were all absolutely right. It's the work that reconnects. And Joanna Macy, she's about 96 now. And at 40, she really had that existential crisis moment of, oh, shit, I'm part of the destruction of all life on Earth. And what am I going to do about this? The work that reconnects is a spiral. So it's looking at the seed and it's honoring the grief and then moving into gratitude. Oh, yeah, then we go into active hope. And then the seeds blowing off the little sapling into wherever they may lead next is, you know, going into action from active hope. And then we go back to honoring the grief. And that was my experience. I would have a massive low like every 3 months. And then it was happening every month where I was like not really functional with my grief. And then it's just going into that gratitude and knowing it's going to circle back again.
Great. That's really helpful. And I'm sure the people listening to this would be very grateful to read that book. Thanks. And yes, thanks so much for your
time.
Well,
thank you so much for doing this and for putting this out into the world.
Music from Climate by Eric Ian Walker, commissioned by the Climate Music Project, who communicate the sense of urgency of the climate and ecological crises through the emotional power of music. More to be found at ericianwalker.bandcamp.com and climatemusic.org.